Blog Talk Radio.
Woo!
It's time to enter the doghouse. From the Mad Dog Dynasty League headquarters in Maguanago, Wisconsin, Bad Guy with a Phone Productions proudly presents another episode of the Mad Dog Dynasty League podcast. I'm your host, the commissioner of the Mad Dog Dynasty League, and the aforementioned fat guy with a phone himself, Rick Goreski. We're getting the band back together to once again continue what is now a journey through the 2016 Mad Dog offseason. We're going team by team, division by division, reviewing the 2016 offseason. Six teams down, six more to go. We're halfway through the white, so after tonight, it's just about downhill from here, which is the perfect segue, because the focus of our show tonight is the two-time champion, Bill Novak's Downhill From Here squad. Before we can do it. It's time to add the we to me. Let me, allow me, if you will, to bring in my co-host for today's show. First, he once hit me in the head with a 9-iron while we were golfing at Warnemont. The owner of the Malicious Minds, Tom Buckles. Tom, thanks for being here tonight.
Hey, yeah, I remember that hole tremendously. I think I put it a foot and a half from the cup, too, that day.
Yeah, you bastard, you beat me. Hold this branch for me, he says. So we're in the rough, we're on the edge, and I hold the branch for him, and on his backswing, he conks me in the melon. Well, anyway, next up, another co-host. He once hit himself in the head with a 9-iron after golfing with me at Warnemont. Please welcome the owner of the Stone Farm Pallies, Steve Wellman. Steve.
And the odd thing is I don't remember anything about that.
Yeah, but if you remember my golfing, makes you want to hit yourself in the head with a 9-iron, doesn't it?
Yeah, and for some reason I can't remember any of it. It's all a blur. I golfed with you? I remember.
Well, you know, the thing is, I have such trouble. I can't track the ball after I hit it. I'm pretty sure it's because I'm hitting it too far, but it's outside chance that it's going a little bit left or right.
Tiger. Easy, Tiger. Do it.
Hey, gentlemen, we are here tonight to talk about Downhill From Here's 2016 offseason. You know the drill. As quickly as I can, I'm going to recap Bill's moves, signings, cuts, taxi promotions, draft choices, what he likes to get at the grocery store. Then we're going to talk about the moves and how they impacted the franchise. So here we go. As I've taken to doing, I'm going to start by kind of laying the groundwork of where Bill's team was entering this 2016 offseason. I'm going to talk about their rankings from 2015 with respect to starter points by position, and I'm going to tell you how they ranked within their division. At quarterback, the league average was 394 points. Downhill finished just over the league average, but yet only third in the white division with 398 points. So 398, only good enough for third best in the white. At offensive flex, the O-flex average in 2015 was 929. Downhill finished third in the white with 891 points. As expected with Rob Gronkowski on his team, Downhill led the white division and the league with 263 tight end points on the season. The league average was only 197, so he blew that away. At place kicker, Downhill was last in the white division and second lowest in the entire league with 104 points total. The league average was 128 points. I remember tracking this during the season, and I couldn't believe how bad his kicker was doing. I remember thinking that you could blindly pull a kicker's name out of free agency and get more points than that. It was remarkably low. At defensive line, Downhill led the white division with 338 total points, 1 point ahead of Lost in the Sauce. The league average was 340, so he was right around the league average at defensive line. And last but not least, defensive flex. Downhill has been drawing from the strength of his roster for years now, winning two titles along the way at defensive flex. Bill led the white division with 1,443 points. The league average was 1,330. Downhill was over 100 points ahead of the league average at this category. Again, classic Downhill from here, right, guys? Defense has been the heart of his team since the auction in 2011. I'm going to impromptu stop and look, because I looked up in preparation for the Red Division shows to see if Bill had the most points in the entire year or league at defensive flex. He had, again, D-flex 1,443, and there were, okay, so he's probably fourth in the league, unless somebody from the blue division bested him, and I'm peeking at that right now. Here we go, one more second. Yeah, he beat everybody in the blue division. So Bill finished fourth in the league with that number at defensive flex. That's how good his defense was. Fourth best in the entire league, definitely best in the white division. So that's how Downhill ended 2015. How strong has Bill's team been over the years? Well, let me tell you, he's finished in first place 4 of the 5 years this league has been around. He's won 3 division titles. He tied for first a fourth time and lost on tiebreakers. His worst record so far was 8-7 in 2012, and by coincidence, that was the only year he didn't make the playoffs. In short, he's been dominant. But this offseason has presented the biggest challenge Downhill has faced as he reached a key point with respect to player contracts on his team. How rough was it? Bill had to use 5 of his 6 tags this offseason. And he used one last year on Gronkowski, or else I think he probably would have used all 6. So he had a lot of talent up, a lot of decisions to make. Let me tell you what he did. Downhill's roster today stands at 32 players. He has $34.62 in cap space. Bill, he re-signed Calvin Benjamin, wide receiver from Carolina, 3 years, $0.50. He was injured last year, so that was a really good signing. Brandon Cooks, wide receiver, New Orleans, another really good signing, 3 years, $7.14 a year. Tight end Luke Wilson from Seattle, 3 years, $0.55. And, categorized as a linebacker right now, Tom Bahali of Kansas City, 3 years, $0.95 a year. Bill then, the tags kicked in as he used a transition tag to re-sign linebacker. His first name just all of a sudden blew me away. Davis, the linebacker from Carolina. Anybody help me out?
Thomas Davis.
Yeah, Thomas Davis from Carolina. He re-signed him on a 3-year deal at $5.90 a year. And likewise, he re-signed Derek Johnson from Kansas City at 3 years, $5.90 a year. Both the transition tag, using the transition tag to keep those players. Bill then used the franchise tag to keep defensive lineman Connor Barwin from Philadelphia, who I think was reclassified as a defensive line. I think
he had been
a linebacker.
Yeah, he went from linebacker to he moved inside, yep.
Yeah, so Bill wisely re-signed him. Also occurring, 3 right-of-first-refusal tags. Bill used a right-of-first-refusal tag on Carson Palmer, D'Angelo Williams, and Travis Benjamin. D'Angelo Williams would have cost him $15.05, so clearly you can't have a backup at $15.05. Carson Palmer would have cost him $12.74. And Travis Benjamin, the wide receiver Travis Benjamin, was right of first refusal tagged. He went to San Diego, would have cost him $4.13 a year, but Bill let him go on a right of first refusal. So he used 5 of his 6 tags, and here's what he cut. He cut Sean Drones from San Francisco, cut Arian Foster. He would have cost him $14.52. Carlos Williams of Buffalo was released. It would have cost him $2.01. Anquan Boldin was released. $3.02 would have been the cost there. Cody Latimer, that was a cut. Golden Tate was cut. Bill had a faced with the decision. This is a guy who maybe he would have tagged if he'd have had an extra tag. He had to either tag him or cut him, and he didn't have any tags left. So on the street goes Golden Tate. Boswell, the kicker from Pittsburgh, I was a little surprised he cut this guy. $1.35 a year is what it would have cost him, but he cut him. Golston, the defensive line from Tampa Bay, cut, would have cost $2.92 a year. Another tagger cut casualty, Hayward from Pittsburgh, defensive lineman. Bill had to tag him or cut him. Didn't have any tags left, so he cut him. Likewise, Kiyomisi, Miami, tagger cut. He let him go. And McCourty, defensive back from New England, he had to tag him or cut him. He ended up having to let him go. So you see what I was referring to when I mentioned that he had all these decisions and these contracts that all just kind of came due at the exact same time, and he only had so many ways to keep the stuff. So thus the decisions that we're going to talk about tonight. Trades, Downhill is one of two teams in the entire league who did not execute a trade as of the time of this podcast, which is August 15th, 2016. So Downhill, I know he had some discussions, but he and Dream Team, the other team, the only two teams in the league that have yet to pull off a trade. So maybe after this show, they should call each other up and make a deal. Draft recap. By the way, there were no taxi squad booms for Bill's team. No taxi promotions or anything like that, claims of other players. Trade-wise, there are no trades. Draft, that's what I was going to tell you about next. In the draft, Bill had five picks. He kept all five of his picks, the 11th overall in every round. Started out with Corey Coleman, wide receiver Cleveland. Moved to Devontae Booker, running back Denver. Wide receiver Farrell Cooper of the Rams. Running back Paul Perkins of the Giants. And finished it out with running back Kenyon Drake of Miami. So that's everything for Downhill. Let's go ahead and move to our panel to see what they think. Guys, we're going to start with Tom today, and I'm interested to hear what your rough thoughts were about Downhill's offseason, and then we'll move position by position.
Well,
you're up, Tom.
I'm looking at his team, and I realized and over the conversations me and him have had over talks with trades and that, that he felt that his defense was more than capable of repeating year in, year out right now. They're getting a little older, but he still feels solid there. So he knows he had to switch the gears and go towards offense. And as evidenced by the draft, everything was basically offensive minded. The only person on his team I tried to make a move to get off him was Gronk, and he wasn't having that, even if it was me giving him an offensive running back and a player of Jordan Matthews, the two of them guys, Matthews and Miller maybe. And like I said, he wanted to keep his one guy because he wants to improve his offense. That's the main piece going forward, he said. Even tried throwing him Andy Dalton in the deal too, and he still wouldn't take three guys for like one in a pick. So kudos to him. I did trim some fat. He was in that position where he had to make some decisions, had to use those cap spaces. Would have liked to see him probably keep Boswell as the kicker for $1.30 or whatever. Would have been nice. He has a few guys on his roster that free agents, suspension kind of guys, things of that nature that he could use either to dump or, you know, find a trade partner out there since he is deep at the defense.
Interesting. I heard some information. I have not had any updates that Gronkowski left practice, kind of limped off the field, and I heard another report that maybe it wasn't anything serious, but just throwing that out there as we're doing the show, that Gronkowski tweaked something in practice. So, Steve, what's your initial impressions about Downhill's offseason?
Well, I kind of agree on what Tom was saying, but the one thing that concerns me is I think that maybe he might have overlooked his defense too much, and the rest of the division is catching him, and I don't think that he can afford to sit on his laurels with his defense. I see a couple of gaping holes in his defense. But maybe he'll address that during free agency. Otherwise, yeah, he made a concerted push to go after the offense. It's just I'm not sure that he picked the right guys to do that with. I mean, Corey Coleman might be okay, but, I mean, name me the last prolific wide receiver that came out of Cleveland. And
Michael Jackson.
I think
actually, Josh Gordon, you got to give him his credit back before
he's
all
prolific.
This suspension.
Well, he's a prolific weed smoker, but, you know, who knows how he plays if he's not high? I don't know. But I'm interested to see where this team goes, whether he can hold on for another year or two while he tries to shuffle the deck, but I have some concerns.
Why don't we segue right into the quarterback spot, and Steve, keep it going. He cut Carson Palmer. He put a right of first refusal on him. I got to say that looking at the cap room that Downhill has, $34.62, he only needs eight players. Would there have been a wiser use of that money on a one-year deal than Carson Palmer?
No, I think, I mean, I would have franchise tagged Palmer. He's got the money to do it.
I don't think he needed to. He could have just re-signed Palmer.
Could he have just re-signed
him? He chose to put a right of first refusal on him. I'd have to go back and look. I think he got Palmer in the auction last year, if I recollect correctly.
Yeah, he did,
correctly.
Yeah.
Right,
which
means he only put a one-year deal on him. Yeah, he only had a one-year deal on him last year, and I can actually click the button and look. I've got everything queued up here. He got him for $2 last year. He put a one-year deal on him. So, in hindsight, I'm sure he would have liked to have extended that deal out for 2 or 3 years. But just throwing it out there because that's what we're doing right now. We're talking about different moves.
In hindsight, how much money he has. Yeah, I mean, he's obviously taking a step back from quarterback because – he probably won't get Carson Palmer for cheaper than what it was. Well, he might, but I wouldn't take that kind of gamble, to be honest. I mean, it's just with that kind of cap space, I would have kept him.
Tom, what do you think? He's got Eli Manning, and Manning is very good, and that offense has been clicking. But you sure do feel better about this team with Carson Palmer and Eli Manning on it.
Like I said before, I had tried making trades with him when I knew that he'd taken Carson off his roster because of the 1274 cap hit. And at that point, I knew, you know what, hey, why not throw an offer at him to try and give him, you know, Andy Dalton. It's a whatever year deal he'd want on him for $4.61. So both his guys would have been signed for 2-3 years out and – you know, it would have been cheaper than having Carson Palmer and all general ideas. But my eyes here are saying that he's going to pick up, you know, a Dalton now, or his mind was set on a Fitzpatrick, a couple guys that had dropped out there. There are a few other quarterbacks out there as well that he could be picking up. But I do think he took a little bit of a step back at quarterback, but I do think that the Giants are a clicking offense and could be a well-oiled machine with some serious high-powered points put up this year.
Well, as they say in auctions, it's always the second player off the board that the value really, the price spikes. And with Carson Palmer being a right of first refusal, all the RFR players go out first in our auction, which means a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's going to be out there, if Bill doesn't get Carson Palmer, does Fitzpatrick become a must for him? And how much will it cost to buy him?
I think he'll get him for a lot less than he would have had to pay for Carson Palmer, I'll tell you that.
Steve, any thoughts
I wouldn't be so sure about that. There's guys like Dalton and Fitzpatrick, especially with teams with the cap room that they have. I mean, they're gonna spend big bucks on these guys and just rent them for a year or two. And I mean, quarterback is an issue for almost every team in this league, and those prices are gonna get high, very high.
And as an owner, I can tell you right now that if I had $54 and I had some spots to play with, and I saw another guy in the league that was hurting and he needed that player, you damn bet I'm going to drive that price up and possibly even take that player right out from under him and leave them completely screwed for the season, because half the equation is what's on your opponent's team. Yes, your team is 50% of it. What are you trotting out there is what's going to determine what you're going to win. The other half is what's on your opponent's team. So blocking him, that could be big. It's going to be interesting to see how this Carson Palmer thing turns out. Why don't we go ahead and move to the offensive flex situation? Steve, why don't we move Tom, you're first in the rotation. What do you think of the offensive flex for the I almost call them the Dirty Hippies. That's his old King Fred A name. Downhill from here.
I'm not sold on this this team's offensive flex. You've got a split back with Giovanni Bernard. After that, you've got a couple tread guys. Benjamin coming off injury, the only guy you got to basically hang your hat on would be Brandon Cooks. So, again, like I said, he drafted offense, and I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Maybe one of these rookies will pan out, but who knows? A lot of the guys that are on there have taken steps back as well. Only time will tell.
Steve, talk about the offensive flex positions, please.
Well, I think he tried to do something in the draft, but I'm not so sure that that's going to help him out in the immediate future. He took Cooper, he took Coleman, he took Perkins. Kenyon Drake was a waste of a pick, and Devontae Booker is such a iffy play in a running back roulette wheel down there that I don't think he can count on any one of those guys to get him through the year. And while Brandon Cooks is a good receiver, I have a feeling that Mike Thomas is going to eat up some of his numbers. Kelvin Benjamin coming back from injury. Green Beckham is fighting off Tajay Sharp for the number two position in Tennessee. So I'd have to say he took a step back. Even though he tried to take a step forward, he took a step back. Now he's going to have to rely again on these transition tags. And, offensive flex is a commodity. I mean, you only have so much money to go around, especially since he has to fill out 8 spots. So, he's probably only working with maybe $25 or so of legitimate cap room. And where is he going to buy these guys from? I don't know.
Well,
Golden Tate, getting rid of Golden Tate was a bad move. Getting rid of, yeah, you're right. D'Angelo Williams couldn't be a reliable guy, but he's going to be reliable for the first 2 weeks, right? So, I don't know.
Yep.
Probably not for that cap that he was going to be hitting for, though. It was a high cap for him to re-sign.
$15. You can't sign a backup running back in the NFL for $15, even if you know you're going to get a few games out of him.
Yeah.
But Golden Tate, I think he would have loved to have kept him. One of those situations where he didn't have any tags. I think he probably would have been a good right of first refusal player, maybe. But
right. So here's what I would have.
He
done,
had to let
honestly.
Him go.
Honestly, I would have actually signed D'Angelo Williams for the $15. Tag Golden Tate. And then when D'Angelo Williams is the backup and no longer the starter, cut him, get $7.5 back.
Well, interesting, he let Travis Benjamin go, who went to San Diego. It would have cost him $4.13 a year. He did put a right of first refusal on him, so give Bill credit in that respect. I wonder if he could have bit the bullet. I know that's a little high for that guy, $4.13, but I wonder if when you're in the situation Bill's in, do you bite the bullet and sign this one so that you can free the tag up and at least have a shot at bringing a Golden Tate back? Real interesting stuff to talk about.
Yeah, I agree.
Go ahead, Tom.
I agree that would have probably been a better move.
I was surprised, especially on these recaps that we've been doing. And the first time I heard Steve mention, he let Benjamin go. I'm like, really? Benjamin's out there and he's going to a team with a quarterback like they have with Keenan Allen and that there. So I was very surprised that he had let that one out there.
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, well, look at Malcolm. Malcolm was always a legitimate starter out there. He's retired. Benjamin's taking his place. There's, I mean, he's a legitimate starter, if not at least a matchup or bye week guy.
Yeah, he's a wide receiver too. So it's a decent position player. I would have brought him back way more than I would have wasted the time with Beckham Green or, you know.
Well, Bill drafted Beckham Green, and I do feel the need to mention that he has spent draft capital on players over the years on offensive flex. It just hasn't hit as hard as he would have liked. Giovanni Bernard was, I believe, a first-round pick, a high first-round pick for Bill. He also drafted Green Beckham. He drafted Cooks. He did draft Cooks.
Yeah,
he drafted Benjamin. Right, Cody Latimer. He's been spending the money. It's just not always turning out.
I would have liked to see him keep him. Yeah, I would have liked to have seen him maybe even think about keeping that guy on. It was in a high price tag for him, but he's only on what, year three, Cody Latimer? I would have probably kept him too.
Well, to contrast last year and this year, Bill last year had the good fortune of having D'Angelo Williams turn into a starting running back. So all of a sudden Williams takes over one of his four O-flex spots, you know, you don't even think about it, set it and forget it. He had Brandon Cooks, who he could set it and forget it. Golden Tate was set it and forget it. And then he was sprinkling in, you know, Anquan Boldin or Benjamin, whoever else he felt the need to sprinkle in based on matchups. Now, this year, it's a totally different ball game. He does, as far as improvements, he gets Kelvin Benjamin back. So that's a plus. That could be a starting player back onto his roster. We've been giving teams credit for getting guys back from injury. He's still got LeGarrette Blount, who can be sprinkled in at time to time. I do think Devontae Booker, in contrast to you, Steve, I think Booker can give him some good games this year, or if Anderson fails, Booker has the talent to take the job. I'm not going to predict that's going to happen. I'm just higher on the possibility of it happening. And I think I'm opposite of both of you on Paul Perkins. I think Perkins, before the year's over, could be the running back in New York. Not sure you're going to get much out of Corey Coleman, but Marcus Wheaton is going to be, thanks to the Martavius Bryant suspension, Wheaton is going to be a guy who could blossom this year. And don't forget, Gronkowski could always get flexed into one of the 4-0 flex if Bill wanted to pick up a tight end or make a trade. Suddenly Gronkowski becomes an every-week starter at 0 flex. So it's definitely not as good as it was last year. Circumstances with D'Angelo Williams playing a big part, having to let guy go of Golden Tate, it's not as good as it was last year. But I still think he's got some pieces to work with, and I do think he's been trying. Why don't we move to the tight end position, where I mentioned Gronkowski's been the heart of his team since he got him in the startup auction back in 2011. Tom, what do you think of the tight end position? He did re-sign Luke Wilson.
Same as last year. He's got his horse to ride. My hope is that he doesn't lose a bit of his touches, catches, looks, or whatever now that they have another tight end in the house with semi-comparable type of talent. They haven't had that in New England since the whole Aaron Hernandez guy was in town there. And now that they got it, I mean, you can see both guys getting 10 to 12 touchdowns, end zone hawks big time. And, I don't know. He's going to end up riding on Gronkowski.
Well, Steve, get your popcorn. Luke Wilson's back on this team for 3 years at 55 cents a year.
Yeah, I remember I drafted him, and I wanted to keep him for so long because I knew he was going to take over, and I think actually Luke Wilson's going to have a bigger year this year than he has in the past, especially since Jimmy Graham is seemingly not consistent or not dependable there. And then, you know, he obviously added Owen Daniels, so that'll help solidify that. So like you said, if he needs to throw Gronkowski into the flex, he can lean on Wilson or Daniels. So I'd say he made a moderate improvement, very slight improvement, but better, definitely.
Well, I can say this much. First of all, Luke Wilson, screw you, you bastard, with your longest developing two-point conversion I've ever seen in my entire life when the Packers played the Seahawks back in that division championship game a couple years. Brandon Bostic, you bastard. That was Wilson with the – he caught the two-point conversion that I still don't understand how the guy got into the end zone with. And secondly, Wilson, I only tongue-in-cheek – you know, say get your popcorn, because Jimmy Graham has a serious injury that he may not be able to come back from, whether people realize that or not. There's a lot of positive camp talk going on from the coaches. A lot of the pundits will call it coach speak. And Wilson could end up being the starter there, so I do think that's kind of a dark horse on his team. But I think the status of the tight end position on his team really stayed the same. He lost Owen Daniels. No big loss. Daniels was really getting to the end of his career, and I'm interested to see what Bill does. I just have a hunch that he'll maybe pick something up in free agency or make a play on something at least.
Well,
that's my take on tight end.
I don't mean to do this to you, but I do mean to do this to you. I'm going to call you out a little bit. You know, in past shows you've talked about, especially like Tannehill, you say that his situation has gotten better in Miami, therefore that position had gotten better.
Oh,
well,
we're out
Wilson's,
of time, Steve. I'm sorry.
Luke Wilson's situation
ahead,
has definitely improved in Seattle, so his tight end's position has to have improved.
But we don't – it's not a given that right now the reports are that Graham is actually – suiting up and going through some motions. So you don't know, the injury he had is so serious that no one expected him to come back, but the reports are that he is actually coming back. So you got to almost wait another week or two to see if this is for real. Is Graham really going to be able to be one of the few people who have overcome this and come back? And if not, then you can say absolutely.
Well, but even if
things
change, if he comes back, I think Luke's targets are going to go up, his yardage is going to go up, and his touchdowns are going to go up just by default, because Graham can't be expected to carry the workload he has in the past.
But I think he went out last year early in the season, so. Going in right now to click the button and tell you what week he went out. Luke Wilson had that last year from week 13 on. And remember, Jimmy Graham had a very disappointing – they use Luke Wilson. I mean, let's all agree to that. They used him. They just don't use him as a major cog in the offense. And from week 13 on, when Jimmy Graham went out, he had, you know – 13 was 2 catches for 36 yards. He had 3 targets in that game. 14, 1 catch for 8 yards. He was targeted twice. Week 15, 2 catches for 17 yards, targeted twice. Week 16, he had 1 target, no catches. Week 17, he seemingly didn't even play. No touchdowns or anything like that. That's kind of his stats all season long. But my point is just that I agree with you that you can make that claim. I just don't know. I've been shocked to find out that Jimmy Graham is. I didn't even think he'd be suiting up and doing anything at all, not even like on the sidelines with the team. He is. He's dressing up and he's going through some motions. He's not out there getting smacked around heavy, but wow, that's more than I thought he would be doing. So maybe he'll make it back on the field. So I'm being totally inconsistent.
You're consistently inconsistent.
Well, I'm agreeing with your point. I just don't know that I 100% see that opportunity being a slam dunk yet. But with kicker, nothing, you know, Vinatieri's had him for years. Moving over to the defensive line spot, Steve, just keep it rolling, man. Defensive line position.
Well, I see he took I think he went backwards this year. First of all, Connor Barwin, I believe, is who he's got there. Went from linebacker to defensive end. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yes.
You can count on one hand after a JPP 4th of July party how many linebackers actually succeeded going inside. It's a different story when a defensive end gets converted to linebacker. That seldom, if ever, works. He's got a free agent.
I swear to God, I'm almost ready to do a Costanza after that. Just leave on a high note. I think we shut her down right now. That was fantastic. But go right ahead. Do you disagree with that, Tom? That particular point on defensive linebackers that move back? I think it depends on the player. Like a guy like Eric Campman was suited to be a defensive lineman. He never should have been moved to outside linebacker.
Yeah. I see three guys on his team that are garbage, and I see three guys with that potential. Quinn coming back off of that back issue, we don't know where he's at. Vernon going to a decent defensive team only makes that defense even better, even though they got the club or the guy with the two fingers or whatever it is on the other end. It's still a solid defense there in the Giants. And to throw in Barwin whenever you need him, I mean, you can alternate Barwin and Quinn. If Quinn can ever return back to the guy that was a couple points or steps just below J.J. Watt, I mean, just remember, a few years back, he was just the only other guy that was that close ever to a J.J. Watt scoring and has been one of the only guys who's ever been able to get that close to him. Otherwise, J.J. Watt runs away with that defensive lineman scoring title every year. But I see him... I would be dropping that free agent, Mario Edwards. I would have kept Hayward from Pittsburgh. That would have been a better fit on his team, and I would have moved those three other guys off the squad. Randy Gregory,
or Golston.
I would have kept
Golston.
Should have kept Golston.
I think Mario Edwards is actually going to have a pretty good year. He's going to improve over last year. But I mean, the fact that he dropped two guys that he probably shouldn't have and kept a guy he shouldn't, and then he's relying on a linebacker going into the interior, I got to say that his defensive line took a step back.
I'll consider it flat, in my opinion. Barwin is going to start. He'll be rotated out or moved around on passing down so Brandon Graham can get a little more pressure on the quarterback. You know, you can, I guess, slightly less. I'll agree to that point that it's, But again, we should talk about the fact that when you're as good as Bill has been, specifically on defense, you know, we're talking about just the 2016 offense or offseason. He's still really good, you know, even with the players he's got left. In the offseason, it did decrease. You know, I think I'll go along with you on that it's not as good as it was last year. But he had some good stuff there to begin with, so it was kind of hard to improve. And I do want to say that Olivier Vernon is in the aggravating NFL name Hall of Fame. Guys like him and Cameron Jordan and Jordan Cameron, you never know, is it Vernon? Olivier Vernon? Just irritates me. But let's move to the defensive flex. We have about six and a half minutes left here to talk. Steve, kick it off, man. Tom, would you like to talk about the D-flex?
I see it as an aging group, but I do see a couple of standouts for him to going forward as a couple new young nucleus guys to build off of. Ben Heaney running the show there in the middle at Oakland. Stephon Anthony, a nice young reliable linebacker in the middle as well, again there in New Orleans. And like I said, we'll see where Tulloch goes. There's been talks that he could end up somewhere. There's a few teams that do need some help in the middle on that linebacking core. But Ron Parker usually shows up year in and year out, solid guy to keep around. But it looks like he does have enough guys to be able to throw out there for a flex position.
Yeah, sorry about that. I lost my earphones. I was just going to say that I thought he did pretty good. And the thing that concerns me the most about this team is that if I can draw the analogy, it's an upside down pyramid where his defensive flex is holding up all the rest of the pieces of his team. And I just don't know if this is the year that's going to be able to carry him or is going to support it.
Well, it's interesting. He drafted Stephon Anthony last year, which I think is going to still turn out to be a great pick. Ben Heaney in Oakland, huge things I think are going to break for him possibly starting this year. Deontay Hightower is now the top linebacker in New England. This guy knows what to do with a defense. It's how he's got himself to two championship games during the time that he's been in the league and, frankly, has been in first place almost every single year. The one time he didn't finish in first, he finished still 8-7 and didn't make the playoffs. But I thought it was fascinating the way that he maneuvered to keep Thomas Davis, Tom Bahali, Derek Johnson. It's just kind of interesting how he was able to hold. I was wondering, I was watching as an owner, as to whether or not he would be able to, what do I want to say? You could see it happening from another owner's perspective. You can watch from the outside looking in, and you can see, oh, this contract's going to be due. What's he going to do? How's he going to afford that? How's he going to fit that into his team? Or that guy's getting older. How's he going to fill that spot when that guy's gone? I thought Bill did a good job on defense this year, and frankly, I thought it was, I will call it improved. Again, Steve, you love it when I do this. You know, like I mentioned, Heaney is going to be the guy. Hightower is going to be the guy. Anthony is going to be the guy. I consider it improved, not drastically, but I think it's improved. Anybody hate that?
I guess, like I said, it's improved, or it's definitely the strength of his team. The thing is that all the, especially from a guy that's also in the division, watching all the other players in the division, they're stacking up the other positions that he doesn't have, and he's not keeping pace, and I just don't know how long that's going to last.
Yeah, I think by next year or the year after, he's got some really tough decisions because Davis isn't going to be there forever. Derek Johnson's not going to be there forever. Laurinaitis has already slowed down. Lawrence Timmons, I mean, Tulloch doesn't even have a team right now. He's going to have some holes to fill, but that's the way the league works. When you're good for that long, there's a price to pay. At some point, you do have to recharge. We have,
I
mean,
they call it
half,
parity.
Yeah,
two and a half minutes
a
left.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
You got a good shot going. Hit it.
I was just looking at, you know, he's going to have another big decision thing again next year. There's a bunch of his defensive guys are all one-year contracts right now, and he's going to have to, you know, make them decisions again next year like he had to do this year.
Going to have to let go of the old and give contracts to the new. Guys, what's a minute and a half to 2 minutes? Quickly, do you have a starting lineup if you're Bill? Tom? Obviously, you start with Manning. Who are your four old flex?
Manning, okay. So we got Benjamin Cooks. Bernard. And you can go either Farrell Cooper, Marcus Wheaton, Gronkowski, Vinny. Be going with Vernier and Connor Barwin. I'll give him a run. Stephon, Anthony, Thomas Davis, Heaney, Hightower, Derek Johnson, Ron Parker. Throw whoever else is in that just last spot there.
Steve, specifically at Old Flex, who do you start for this team?
I guess
Bill.
I start Bernard, Blount, Benjamin, and Cooks. Those are the four that are going to be guaranteed to be doing something week one. Obviously, Gronk. I would start Mario Edwards. I think he's going to have a great year this year, and Vernon, and the defensive flex, obviously Anthony Davis, Holly, Heaney, Hightower, Johnson. Those are probably your best six right there, right from the top to the bottom or top to the
guy. Two questions, guys, as we close in under a minute or so to go. Can this team compete in the white division, and what out of a 5-point scale do you give the offseason? Start with you, Tom.
Yes, it can compete, and I give it a 3.5.
Steve?
Yeah, he can compete, and I agree, 3.5.
I think he can compete as well, and I am going to actually go along with your 3.5-point scale. This team, I think, will be vying for first place as it has been. I just think over time it's getting a little harder and harder to keep doing it, and that's the way we made the league. It's supposed to be that way. So, guys, that's going to do it. It's a race against time, and time always wins, right? Remember to look for our upcoming shows in the 2016 off-season series. lost my place. One more team left in the white division. The only man to win consecutive titles. Tim Savoir's Lost in the Sauce is up next. Until next time, I'd like to thank Tom Buckles and Steve Wellman for joining me tonight. I'd like to thank all of you for listening. This has been another episode of the Mad Dog Dynasty League podcast. Time to sail away.
Set an open course for the fun to see.